We're at 877-333-RICK, and you can write us about your experiences appreciating the beers of Europe at radio@ricksteves.com. Our guests are Ferdy Mengi from Belgium, Roy Nichols from England, Stephen McPhillamy from Ireland, and Dave Herline, an American who's married into the culture of Denmark and is a travel expert on Scandinavia. And we've got Mary on the line from Ocean Springs, Mississippi. Mary, thanks for your call.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I'm thrilled to hear your guests from all over Europe talking about beer. We lived there for 3 years in Germany, and we lived in the town of Bitburg, which is famous for the Bitburger beer.
Yes,
Bitter and a Bit.
Yes.
Mm. Yes, and in fact, I still have a bumper sticker on my car. And one of the things we did do whenever we traveled around, and we did go to Belgium and had the wonderful Belgian beer, is we would always try the local beers. We would always ask the waiter for the local beer from that area. And a lot of people, they don't think of the beers when they go to Europe. They think of the wines and the things like that. And I think that most of the tourists that go to Europe are missing out when they don't try the local beers, because they are just wonderful, and it just hurts my heart that we can't get them here.
Oh, it hurts my heart, too.
They are just far superior to American beers.
Why is that? You guys, does anybody have any thoughts on Dave Herline?
I think, Mary, if I'm not mistaken, part of it is the German beer purity law from the 1500s, where they said that beer can only have the natural ingredients of the water, the hops, and the barley.
Exactly. The German beer is naturally carbonated. There's no carbon dioxide induced into it like it is with the American beers. They don't sit so heavy on you, and you really don't have as severe after effects from them. And just like one of your guests was saying, that they give it to the ladies that have just given birth to their children, they do the same thing in Germany.
Yeah.
They give the ladies a beer before they go home. And over there, it's a beer a day keeps the doctor away instead of an apple.
That's so true.
But it has the same effect.
In fact, when I was in Germany, I was visiting some families, and they were teaching their children to appreciate beer with a near beer, a children's beer.
Oh, yes.
That was actually designed for kids to learn to enjoy the taste of beer with a very small alcohol level.
Oh, yes. And they have beer breaks like we have coffee breaks.
I remember, Mary, when I grew up in Belgium and I was a kid, and we drank beer when we had our lunch or dinner. I mean, it was not a strong beer. We call it table beer, but it's like 3% of alcohol.
Right.
But as a kid.
Right.
You know, and I'm 105 years old right now, so I'm doing pretty well.
There you go. How can that be wrong?
And Mary, it's Stephen from Ireland here. A lot of the beer from my country is very available in America because of the presence of Irish pubs, you see.
But yes, my son works in one.
Oh, there you go. Well, you see, and they say that Guinness doesn't travel well, and I wonder what you think on that. I kind of agree with it, but I think it might be because it's not poured properly. I wonder, is that a reason?
I have had the Guinness here in this country, and I like it quite a bit. I never made it to your country when I was over there, but we're planning a trip soon.
Excellent.
But another thing is the way they pour the beers. Now, a Bitburger, that was a 7-minute beer.
Oh, my God.
It
7 minutes?
7 minutes to properly pour a Bitburger. That's why when you ordered one, then you ordered another one right away.
Dave, how can that be?
Well, that's a good point, Mary. I think
because
it's not.
It had a very heavy head.
Exactly, and I think that's not just Bitburger, but any of the Pilsner-style beers.
Everyone.
Because that creamy head is important to the beer. You know, they fill the beer basically full of foam initially.
It
settles down, then they have to wait. And so a lot of Americans I've been with, they order a beer, and then they're sort of thinking, hey, geez, where's my beer? Did the waiter forget about us?
Yeah.
And sure enough, like you say, 7 minutes later, here comes this perfect beer right in front of you.
Right, uh-huh. And it's just wonderful. Just wonderful.
Wunderbar.
Even the foam is good.
I mean, there's a difference between Germany and Belgium, the way they pour beers. I mean, I've been in Germany a lot, and I grew up, you know, in Belgium. The way they pour beers, I mean, in Germany, they pour a beer straight, with the glass straight.
Yes.
In Belgium, they're holding the glass in an angle,
mm-hmm.
which
yes,
makes
like
it very fast.
Here.
And we don't have the patience to wait 3 minutes. You know? The Belgians
in
want
Belgium.
To drink their beer now.
So there's no 3-minute beer in Belgium, really?
There's no 3-minute beer in Belgium.
Because in Ireland, it's sinful not to let the Guinness take its time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You'll see them all, a nice big tray of creamy Guinness lined up. They're just waiting for the black to turn into
You're
white.
You're tearing up as you talk.
Absolutely. Oh, salivating here.
And you can always call ahead. Say, I'm coming. Start pouring.
Beer. Mary, thanks for your call.
Well, thank you so much. I enjoy your show immensely.
Great.
I'm not drinking Coke. I'm not drinking wine. Bring me another beer. Can I be just fine?
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking beer in Europe, and we don't have a Czech person here, but I'll tell you. Czech beer. It rivals the best in Europe, and it hits the table like a glass of water does here in the States, and it's strong. I remember on my first trips when I was a younger guy, I would go and have my, you know, you just can hardly avoid it in a restaurant. You get a glass of beer with your meal, and my momentum was always just killed for the rest of the afternoon. I always thought I'm sightseeing on Czech knees, and I realized it's just a double beer, really.
What's percentage right. strength would it be? Do you know,
Dave? Do you know what?
You know, I don't think that the beers in Europe in general are that much stronger than American ones, but I think it's just largely the quantities that they're consumed in. And to speak up for the Czechs, the Pilsner beer that we spoke of earlier comes from the town of Pilsen in the Czech Republic, where it was invented in the 1800s. The Czechs are great beer drinkers. I think they are the highest per capita in the world. They'd consume something like 40 gallons a year per capita. So they're very, very proud of that.
And they push it because you got to actually say stop, or they'll keep filling you up. They'll keep bringing you beers. When your beer's almost done, you got another one on the table.
Exactly.
And in Belgium, when you order a beer, in my language, you say a pils.
A pils.
A pils. And it comes from Pilsner. So you don't say a beer or a pint, you say pils. Pilske. You know, if you want a small beer, which, you know, named after Pilsen.
Yep.
Anne from Elmwood Park, Illinois is on the phone. Anne, thanks for your call.
Hi, thank you. Actually, two summers ago, we backpacked through Europe, and we went to 10 different countries, and our goal was to try different beers in every country. So we tried out more than 10 beers, 10 different kinds, a few in each one. And actually, going back to talking about the local breweries, I found those to be very good. One of my favorite ones was called Kozlak from the northern part of Poland, Gdańsk. And that one uses no preservatives. Everything's very natural, and it's the most amazing beer you'll ever have.
Hmm. Wow.
And then I've heard
of a good Polish beer. That's interesting to know.
Mm-hmm. Me too. Yeah.
It's very, very good. And I don't think a lot of people know too much about it because it's a medium-sized brewery. And then another one that I really liked was Rügenbräu Dunkel from Interlaken in Switzerland. And I know you like to go to Switzerland a lot, Rick, so have you had that one before?
What is the name of that?
Rügenbräu.
What's the big beer they serve at Walter's Hotel?
I think the one they serve at Walter's Hotel is Feldschlossen, but that's from Basel, because Walter, the owner of the hotel, is from Basel. Again, speaking to the loyalty that Europeans have for their beer.
So all the way in to the Berner Overland from Basel. Okay, well, there is that loyalty, and I think, Anne, the fun thing when you're traveling is to, sample the local cuisine, whether it's liquid or solid, and certainly you go to Belgium or you go to Poland, you'll find yourself a good beer there.
Mm-hmm.
I even noticed in Spain, there's different beers in Spain that are very patriotic, and in the south, everybody's drinking a certain kind, and it's lighter because it's hotter, and in the north, they would never drink that one because they've got their own. When I was in Oslo, man, they're not going to drink the Hansa. The Hunts is the Bergen beer, I think. They're going to drink whatever's brewed there in that part of Norway. Thanks for your call,
Anne. Very loyal. You're welcome. Thank you.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking beer in Europe, and beer is, all over the world. Beer represents the local cultures with a lot of pride. And how you toast people is an important part of the whole situation, the whole culture. Roy Nichols in England, tell us a little etiquette for a visitor to England who might want to look like he knows what he's doing in a pub when he wants to toast to somebody.
Well, it's the ubiquitous cheers. That's what everybody does. That's really the only way of acknowledging other drinkers and your host, maybe.
And it's pretty hard to screw up then.
Very straightforward.
Because
in
Denmark, Dave Herline, you can screw up.
It's very different in Denmark. In much of Scandinavia, you don't need to actually clink glasses. The host will say, skål. Everybody raises their glass, never higher than their eyebrow. You make quick yet meaningful eye contact with those around the table. You drink. After you drink, you lower your glass and give that quick yet meaningful eye contact again to make sure your neighbor's not getting too buzzed. And then you drop your glass to the table. So there's never any need to clink among Scandinavians.
And you drop your glass to the table?
Yes.
After you've drank?
After you've drank.
Okay, so we're all holding a beer here. Let's do this, Dave. Do us a Danish toast.
Yeah. So I would say skål.
Skål.
We each look at each other quickly and meaningfully.
Eye contact. Yeah.
We drink.
You look too long. We drink.
Bring our glass below our eyes, and we look again at each other, make sure we're all doing all right.
All right.
Everybody doing good?
Yep.
Good. Absolutely.
All right.
And then the
glass down together. Yes. Now, that's the sort of conviviality, a community there around the beer.
It probably goes
back centuries.
Exactly, and it works especially well. I'm sure we've all been in that experience of being at a large table, especially, where it becomes awkward to reach over and clink everybody's glass.
Yeah.
The Scandinavians know, just make that quick contact with each other, and it's the same as clinking.
Stephen McCullough.
Well, in Ireland, we would say one word, just like the English would say cheers, we say slancha. S-L-A-I-N-T-E, and it basically translates as health. And in Scotland, they would say slánchéowá, You know, same thing, good health in your life. But we don't have this pressure of the eye contact. I've worked with Danish tourists and Germans over the years, and when I would give them a clink and I'd say cheer or slantje, they would always say to me, you must have the eye contact. And I don't really like giving the eye contact. And in Ireland, we're not comfortable with the eye contact too much because it could start a fight.
It does strike me as being an Englishman where the system is a lot simpler. There's a serious waste of serious drinking time.
When you get waste around wondering about the eye contact. And
well, one of the German girls said to me, if you don't look in the eye, when you say cheers, you'll get 7 years bad sex.
That's what they
say. I said,
yeah.
I'm Irish. I've got a lifetime of bad sex ahead of me. But it seems to be the eye contact is vital, but definitely not in Ireland, and I doubt it in England as well, probably.
No, not at all.
I think that Belgium is probably one of the few countries where we have a lot of words to say. Skål, cheers, chin chin, gezondheid, prost. We have about 10 ways to say, and the eye contact is coming into play right now. I mean, all more right. and more we say, and we picked it up from the Austrians.
The eye contact.
The eye contact. You cannot cheer to each other without looking in the eye because it's not meaningful and it's not meant.
And now chin chin is Italian, right?
Chin chin, yeah. But
it's going all over Europe, I think. Chin chin. But, Stephen, when you say slancha in Ireland, that's Gaelic. If you said cheers in Ireland, isn't it more natural for you to, even if you don't speak Irish?
Yeah, you'd always say slancha. Up the north now, I mean, many people, of course, in our pubs in the north are divided by Protestant and Catholic, and therefore even the beer is sadly religiously
divided. So you go to a Protestant pub in Belfast.
All right, well,
would you say slancha?
No, you'd never say slancha, no.
No,
for fear of offending or for fear of getting the living daylights possibly beaten.
You'd say what Roy says in jolly old England.
Cheers, wow. Yeah. Cheers. But the interesting thing about Belfast, for any of your visitors who come to Ireland and they go to Belfast let's say they go into a pub where that's classed as a Protestant pub, well, they're not going to get Guinness there either.
What are they going to get?
They're going to get either a local beer from Belfast, maybe Bass, or
is there a
Scottish beer, Tennent's or McEwan's.
So there's no stout?
Not really, no. They're more into their lagers.
So you Irish guys suffer through your stout just because it's Irish.
Yeah, but the thing is, I know some Protestant people in Belfast who regard Guinness as the Irish southern beer, the Catholic beer, yet Arthur Guinness was an Anglican, a Church of Ireland person, a very devout Protestant.
And it's the national drink of Catholic Ireland.
Yeah.
Fascinating. I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking beer. We're joined by Ferdinando Menghi from Belgium, Roy Nichols from England, Dave Herline from the United States, and Stephen McPhillamy from Northern Ireland. And our phone number is 877-333-RICK. Our email address, radio@ricksteves.com. Carrie's on the phone in Sioux City, Iowa. Carrie, thanks for your call.
Oh, thank you. We homebrew when we can. We've only done a few batches so far, and I was wondering if there are any ingredients that are available only to European brewers that we Americans can't get our hands on.
I think it's the issue of, for you guys, getting, for example, hops into your country. It's the, what is it, the FDA or the immigration that kind of not allows you to bring any
To import European hops. We got our own hops, though.
Yeah, you have your own hops.
But so you're saying the European hops are different than the American hops?
Yes.
How so?
Well, it's the quality and the way it's grown, and probably the soil, I think, is very important where it's grown it.
And also the variety of the hops, because each country has its own family of hops which produce the different types of beers that are suited to the soil and the climate, as Ferdy's already pointed out.
So these have been nurtured over the centuries?
Developed over hundreds of years for
the
particular climate.
And personality. So it really is part of the terroir.
Of course, yes. It gives the very personality of the beer.
I never thought of beer having a terroir, but I can see that. If you're from Dartmoor or Cornwall and you've got your hops that you really like, or if you're Welsh or German, and it's been cultivated for the centuries.
In Belgium, the hops are grown in the north. You will never find hops really down south. You know, they're all in the north, mainly because of the soil.
And Carrie, see, in Ireland, we don't really homebrew at all. I think it's a great tradition. I wish we had it because it would bring a whole new vibrancy to our beer culture. I'm not sure about the rest of the lads here in Europe about home brewing, but in Ireland it's just not done. We go to the pub and we don't brew at home, sadly.
But you don't even have microbrews. It's all giant corporate beer in Ireland.
Guinness owns practically everything. We have a few wee microbreweries starting. There's one in the middle of the Temple Bar in Dublin called the Porter House, and the odd one here and there, but generally we don't have microbreweries.
Because I get the sense England is just busting out with little microbrews.
Oh yes, there's hundreds. I mean, every county in England will have its own at least half a dozen different types of small brewery. I mean, there are the large producers, but they're really balanced out by the very small producers.
Carrie, is that interesting to you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I suspect that a lot of the differences in beer as well can be attributed to, you know, there's just something in the water. You know, water is different wherever you go.
Well, they say
that will definitely show up in the beer.
Is that true? I grew up
Totally true.
I think it's right. I've heard, like, for example, in Dublin, the water is harder and it gives the beer a certain taste, whereas in Bavaria, it's much softer. But speaking of home brewing in Europe, I think in general they have such good beer where they are. They don't need to as much. But I do know in Scandinavia, not so much in Denmark where my wife lives, but in Norway and Sweden where beer is very expensive, boy, home brewing of beer and making your own wine is very popular.
And home brewing, that's in Belgium, that the beer is usually very heavy. It's the alcohol content, it's very high when they make home brewed beer.
We must remember, in fact, it's not just the hops or the water, but also all the ingredients that go into the beer. You know, the different varieties of barley, the malted barley, the main essential ingredient in beer, is going to make a huge difference.
And if I think all around, if I'm thinking Czech Republic, Roy's England, Stephen's Ireland, going to a beer hall with Dave in Munich, it is the culture that comes together with this beautiful, simple drink that really makes the experience magic. I can think of just glowing, memorable, like some sort of wonderful Rubens painting experience. Mm-hmm. Relating to beer drinking in pubs with people, with a conviviality, whether you have eye contact or not, appreciating the local
beer. Well, this is a tradition that goes back, really back in time. This is not something we talk about for 100 years. This is generations, you know, centuries that have been brewing beers.
Consequently, that local pride. Carrie, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
We've been looking at some of the variety of beers you can find among the countries of Europe and how they reflect the local culture on Travel with Rick Steves. Our companions are Englishman Roy Nichols, Irishman Stephen McPhillamy, Belgian Ferdinando Mengi, plus American Dave Herline, amply representing Scandinavian drinking traditions. I'd like to close letting each of you guys give us a little toast in your language and tell us just a little bit about it. Let's start with Stephen McPhillamy in Ireland.
Well, in Ireland, Dave, slánce.
Slánce.
Dave Herline.
In Denmark, we talked about, they say, skål. Skål means skull, and traditionally they supposedly drank alcohol out of the skulls of their enemies.
Vikings.
Skål.
Yeah.
Sure. Whoa, skål. Roy.
And of course, in England, we say cheers. Cheers, Ferdy.
Cheers.
And Ferdinando Mengi in Belgium.
Well, in Belgium, we say gezondheid. It means to your health.
To your health. Gezondheid to all of you.
Gezondheid.
Thanks very much.
So, cheers.
Enjoy yourself, it's later than you think.
Can work for years and years, you're always on the go. You never take a minute off, you're busy making dough. You say someday you'll have your fun when you're a millionaire. Imagine all the fun you'll have in your old rocking chair.
Enjoy yourself, it's later than you think. Enjoy yourself while you're still in the pink.
Tell us about your favorite beer pilgrimages in Europe or elsewhere. You can post your suggestions for a great place to enjoy a memorable brew in the radio section of our website at ricksteves.com. Next, we'll find out about a most unusual religious relic in one of the more peculiar Italian hill towns with travel writer David Farley. He wrote An Irreverent Curiosity about Calcutta, Italy, where he went to investigate a mystery that involves centuries of intrigue.